perfect for team building, meetings, events, and more. The Hui Room is only a few metres from the beach, which is great for extra activities, and accommodation is available for anyone coming from out of town. We do great discounted rates for locals too, so give us a call on 825 8283 today.
Raglan Community Radio supports the Raglan Food Bank.
The food bank can be found at 36 Bow Street opposite the Community House and is open for business between 1 and 3 Mondays and Fridays.
Donations can be dropped off at these times or at Super Value.
Check out the food bank's current needs on our sign at the Super Value entrance or online at surfside.co.nz.
Or find out more about the Surfside Community Services, Food Bank and Counselling Services by phoning 825 5199.
The Raglan Food Bank. Raglan's only true community bank.
On the air, on the web, 24/7. RaglanRadio.com.
And kia ora, good evening, Whangarau and Raglan. Hope you're finding it a good evening this evening and you've got over Christmas and forgiven me for the silence last week. Trying to avoid silences this week. It's now 6:05, so an hour and 25 minutes of Raglan talking to Raglan. And let's, as usual, first of all, have a look at what the weather's doing. So the weather looks as though it's going to be a sort of summery weather for a bit. Possibility of a shower. Well, could be a shower almost any time tomorrow, but not very likely. More likely there's going to be an odd shower on Sunday, but basically it's a dry week ahead. So hope that's not the beginning of a drought. The temperature last time I looked was 19 degrees, has been in the mid-20s in the middle of the day, going down to 11 overnight, and the range over the next few days is going to be from that low of 11 up to 23 again. So not particularly cold, not particularly hot, quite comfortably warm, I suppose. 1,009 hectopascals is the pressure at the moment, which is fairly low, which is why there's that possibility of a shower tomorrow. Probably not very much and not very likely, but possible. The wind is blowing the trees around a bit, which fits in with the forecast of southwesterly 15 knots. The southwest swell of 2 metres. The next low tide will be just before 11 this evening, 0.7 metre low tide, so not especially low. And the next high tide we'll see, there'll be one just before dawn tomorrow morning. And then there'll be one at 6:08 tomorrow evening, a 2.9 metre high tide. So again, not particularly high tide. Days, of course, getting shorter, but only getting shorter in the mornings, not in the evenings. So we've still got the 9:13 as the sun set, which we had last week and I think the week before as well. So it's that time of year when the evenings don't change and the mornings do. So we've lost another 6 minutes of daylight in the morning. So it's now 6:06 for a sunrise. And let's have a look at what's been happening this week. In the last couple of days, I think there have been stories popping up, in particular one that was only about 4 hours ago. Or at least when the story came out, the story it's about was in the middle of last night, 2:50 a.m. around, it says. Seven young people were arrested following incidents. Police responded to reports of a vehicle believed to be stolen doing burnouts on Riria Kariopa Memorial Drive. And the occupants then reportedly attempted to steal another vehicle. It seems that they maybe weren't too successful, because that's why we end up with seven arrests. But the other vehicle was Monaco Road. When it says attempted, I'm not sure what that means they actually did. Police from both West Waikato and Hamilton City, located vehicles leaving Raglan. The drivers were signalled to stop, however they continued. There was no pursuit. Instead, police maintained long-range observation and tyre deflation devices were successfully deployed on the main road and at Mangakino, the junction of Mangakino Road and the main road. A vehicle was abandoned there and another continued to Waitatuna Valley Road where that one was abandoned. And all the occupants were arrested. And a young person is due to appear in the Hamilton Youth Court on charges of unlawfully taking a motor vehicle and failing to stop. The remaining six have been referred to youth services. And in a separate incident, a couple of hours later, a vehicle was allegedly set on fire down the bank on Wainuru Road, which spread to the surrounding scrub. The fire was extinguished and inquiries are going on to determine if the incidents are linked. So no doubt we'll hear more about that court case. Or we may do, we don't always. And there's another story which is in several of the media from, 5 days ago, saying that there was a video showing a boat coming close to the shore and speeding dangerously close through surfers as the boatie apparently tries to surf a wave. Ben Barr, owner of a surf cam website, goodsurfnow.co.nz, said he looked for the video footage on his website after surfers brought the terrifying incident to his notice. It's really unusual behaviour. They just drove, like, straight through everybody. He said the boat driver first tried to enter the lagoon at Indicator's surf break and then went right through the surfers at Manu Bay, almost hitting several. He said people in the water were terrified. When the surfers came to the boat ramp, they were really aggressive. They obviously were confused. It's a miracle no one got hurt. Boats mustn't exceed a speed of 5 knots, a fast walking speed, if they're within 200 metres of the shore and within 50 metres of any other boat or person swimming. It could have easily chopped the surfers up and landed them because the boat could have landed on them because the boatie had no control over what they were doing. He said the boat went into the lagoon. They came from way out at sea and in the area and were really confused or something. It was weird because they went into a lagoon further out. You don't go in there, particularly not in a boat. He said boaties need to stay away from surfers, particularly if they're in waves. In this case, the boaties needed to go right round the surf break. There was no need for them to go straight through the middle. It was just so reckless. According to Maritime New Zealand, boats must not exceed a speed of 5 knots. That's repeating what I said before. Not sure why that's in there. Second time, maybe it shows that some stories don't get edited all that much and shows that I didn't check it properly before I wrote it down either. And the only other story I've spotted was that a big crowd is back for New Year's Eve parade. So this is going back to last week when I gave you a live commentary or attempted to give you a live commentary on what was happening. And so this is a story from Raglan 23, written by Roger, who runs that website. After a weather bomb caused the 2023 parade to be cancelled, a big crowd was back for 2024. It was organised and sponsored by the Lions Club. And although rain and wind earlier in the day caused some worry, by 7 p.m. It was all clear. Parade draws entrants from local businesses, organisations and whānau, and this year saw a large number of marching and dancing participants with the traditional Highland band complemented by Samba Nation. So these were the drummers that I was trying to work out who they were, Foxy Squirrels and Prairie Dogs. otherwise known as the Raglan Line Dancers, and the Raglan Art to Wear Performers. This year, the parade was 15 minutes long, which fitted in very well with Raglan Talking to Raglan, because starting at 7 and having two 15-minute sessions, ended just on 7:30. Couldn't have been better, rather better than my performance earlier when I went to have a look at the parade assembling and didn't manage to press the right buttons on the radio control and ended up with that silence. So, yeah, I'm going to say sorry about that. So Roger says with the traditional twice around the median strip palms, it was 30 minutes overall. The longer length caused an issue as the parade tail had not cleared the bottom of Bow Street when the parade head with the Highland Band was ready to start its second loop. So that's something I missed out on from the radio studio. Didn't realise there'd been a problem down there, which maybe accounts for the way that the parade stopped with the radio float just outside the radio studio, which I thought was intentional, but maybe it was because the beginning of the parade was catching up with the tail of the parade. And the only other story that I've noticed is that we've got some of the COVID figures back again. These are the figures for Waikato. I think there's been about a three-week gap and they've still not come up with the numbers in hospital, but the number of cases is slightly up. It seems to bob up and down around about the 100 mark. This week it's 102, and the number of deaths seems to lag somewhat behind that. And we've only got one death this week, which has been attributed to COVID in the Waikato region. So maybe that's sort of fairly indeterminate news. So those are the things which I've spotted in the news this week. Let's have some music, and then we'll listen. I will try and tell you something about Raglan a century ago. As a century ago, I've been looking at each year for several years now, so going back to 1925, and 1925. I did try and cheat, actually, to try and get the AI to help me. But AI was far too intelligent for me. It just told me that nothing significant happened in Raglan in 1925, which is quite true, but that there were quite a lot of things which did happen, even though they weren't especially significant. I think there's, if you're interested, you might want to go and have a look at the Raglan 23 website, where I think so far there's three out of the four episodes of it being shown. Quite a bit more. There's another quarter to come. So hopefully that will help you follow some of what I plan to say. Anyway, let's say have some music, and let's have Midge Marsden with Nadine. Midge Marsden's was a resident of Raglan down near the wharf for several decades. Now moved back to Auckland, but still occasionally visits Raglan and does performances. So here goes Midge Marsden with Nadine.
Held me so tight.
Very quickly. Nadine from Midge Marsden. You're listening to Raglan Talking Raglan on Raglan Community Radio. You're on your finger at 22 minutes past six. And one of the things I haven't done yet is do the things which are on this week. So maybe it's a fairly short list. So I think the Harbourview Hotel has trivia night going again. So that's 7 o'clock this evening. Not aware of anything other than Ramblers happening tomorrow. Maybe shows that I've not caught up with what is happening yet. But on the Thursday at the Yard, there's in the evening, there's P-Nature, on playing then. On Friday at the Town Hall, there's an exhibition starting called Capturing Energy from Raglan Art. So it's a group of local artists who are putting on an exhibition 9 till 4 at the Town Hall from Friday through to Monday. Is it? No, not Monday. Yes, Monday. And then in the afternoon again, there's music at the Yard and indeed in the evening. So 3 o'clock onwards, starting with a debut album release, and then from 5 o'clock onwards on Friday, Deckside Sessions. And on Saturday, the Harbourview Hotel has music with Schizophonics. That's from 7:30 on Saturday. And on Saturday at the Yard, there's Flowidus and Friends 360 show. Moving on to Sunday, Creative Market on this Sunday, second Sunday of the month, so 9 till 1. And the Yard's got more music in the evening from Bobby Brazuca, Latin 45s. That's it, as far as I've noticed the things on this week. So apologies if I've missed loads of things, but maybe I've just not caught up with what's happening yet. We've almost got to the bottom of the hour, so maybe you'll have the bottom of the hour items and then I'll start telling you about the history 100 years ago. So let's see if I press that button, whether we get the half-hour ad rotation as it says here.
If you like random, I see sinners in a church, lots of shenanigans, and all of the topics, and not so random special guests and interviews, tune in Monday between 7 p.m.-ish and 8:30 p.m.-ish. Am I using that right?
What's the difference?
5 minutes.
How do you guys do that?
And replay Thursday, Primetime Drive Time, 5 p.m. till 6:30.
On 98.1.
Your weekly random rendezvous with Reza, your introversion that you have. raglanradio.com. Check out the live stream.
On a journey of what it takes to be.
Raglan Community Radio 98.1, the best in the West.
Yeah, not sure whether it's the best in the West this evening, but see what we can do. Sands of Time is a name which Dave at the Chronicle, when he was editing it, gave this series. So, as I say, been doing it for a long time now. When episode 4 comes out on Raglan 23, you'll be able to see the links to the previous ones going back 15 years now, to back to 1910, but this is 1925. And in those 15 years, quite a lot had changed. So Raglan had been a fairly sleepy village. Well, it still was probably in 1925, but rather less so. And the First World War hadn't happened, and the roads hadn't been much improved. They were just beginning to improve them at that time. But by 1925, a large part of the story or the discussion at that time was about the roads and how to pay for them, and which ones to improve and how to improve them. And there was also quite a bit bigger population than it was back in 1910. So back in 1910, or 1911 to be more precise, the population was 246, but by 1925 it had grown by another 70 or so people to 330, so almost a third bigger than it had been back in 1910. Of course, that's much smaller than the 3,717 that were counted at the 2023 census. So Raglan's grown about just over 10 times since in that last century. But even in the previous 15 years, it had grown by about a third, so quite a bit. So there were new people, and there were new ideas, and but as I say, the roading was the thing which dominated the news back in 1925, as it had done for a few years previously. There was also the footbridge, which was built in 1925. The shipping service probably began to gradually run down, because 1925 seems to have been the first year that it made a loss. The shipping had, when Raglan was formed back in the 1850s, 1860s, the shipping had been very spasmodic. Sometimes people ran out of things because the ship was delayed, or the ship just didn't turn up, or there was no regular shipping. Captains decided, no, might as well call into Raglan today. Seems to have been pretty much how it worked. And then in the late 1870s, 1880s, the Northern Steamship Company was formed, and it was the sort of northern counterpart to the Union Steamship Company, which had much wider sphere of influence and covered a much bigger area and was a much bigger company. But up in the north, Raglan had a regular weekly connection with Onehunga, and there was a train from Onehunga there, 8 kilometres or so into Auckland. So the way of getting to Raglan in those days was to get on the train and in Auckland, pretty much where Britomart Station is now, and catch the train out to Onehunga, half an hour or so, and then get onto the ship and catch the ship down to Raglan once a week, if you're lucky. And if it wasn't too windy or whatever, or the ship didn't break down, or all sorts of problems, but I'll come to those later. And one of the other changes that happened in 1925 was that the Wallace Flax Mill just at the foot of the Ocketty Falls closed. Raglan had been quite a major flax producer, particularly in the 1910s. So some of the earlier histories that I've covered talked about how the flax mills were being developed and what an important industry it was locally, but by 1925 that wasn't the case. So come back to that a bit more later as well. St. Peter's Church had its foundation stone laid, and then it was opened, and then it was dedicated, and in 1925 it was the dedication. And 1925, it's a bit of a mystery over quite when the palms were planted down the middle of Bow Street. Well, they were palms and pahutukawas originally, but then in the 1960s the council chopped down some of the pahutukawas that had been planted there, until they were stopped by a protest group, which is why we've still got pahutukawas down the bottom end of Bow Street, but not at the top end of Bow Street. Artificial intelligence said that there was nothing of particular significance that happened in Raglan in 1925, but locally it was quite a change to have more roads and to have a footbridge and things like that. So let's have a look in more detail at what was happening. As I say, if you want to have a look at the Raglan 23 website, or in fact if you've got access to the Raglan Photos pre-2000 Facebook page, then you can have a look at the link there as well, which shows some of the pictures which are available to show what Raglan was like 100 years ago. And one of the pictures is taken from somewhere up the top of Stuart Street, looking down to the Harbour View Hotel and what was then the Royal Hotel, just down on the seafront on Cliff Street, and the 1914 post office is another prominent building at that time, and the town hall, which was burnt down another couple of years later on. So the town hall we've got at the moment, which is labelled Municipal Buildings, which... And yet it was originally called the Town Hall, and that name stuck and is still used even almost a century later, despite the label on the front of the building. There's a National Library photo which shows quite clearly the centre of Raglan, so it's quite a useful photo. As I say, it doesn't have a date on it, but it does seem that it's very likely that it was from 1925, because it does show the AARD garage with that label on it, which is where the supermarket, which has just been revamped, is on Bow Street, or at least it was there, next to the Harbour View Hotel. And... that gives a date to the photo, because the AARD, which was a fairly early franchise, but it was the way in which the early bus companies, or service cars as they called them in those days, managed to coordinate what they were doing, and had AARD services running across the country. Rather more buses in those days, or rather more routes in those days than we've got now. The Raglan bus, I think, only ran once a day rather than the current three or four times a day. So we've advanced a bit in that respect, but we've lost quite a few of the routes which used to connect with it, like to Tamatara and Kafia and various other places. As I say, the Royal Hotel was one of the buildings which is on this photo. We've still got the Harbour View Hotel, still in the form which it is back in 1925. Most of the buildings in the centre of Raglan burnt down at one time or another. As I say, the town hall was a couple of years after this photo was taken. The store in the middle of town, which then was Gilmore's, is now the Wales Cafe, that had burnt down 5 years earlier and been rebuilt. So that also gives a date to this photo, because it was rebuilt at the end of 1924. So between the ARD advertising changing and the that store being built, this photo must have been taken, which puts it at the beginning of 1925, around almost exactly 100 years ago from now. And it was an era when there were, wasn't much awareness of racism. Racism, when you look at some of the things that were written, does seem to have existed, but awareness that it was anything of a problem or that existed even doesn't seem to have been there. And to my mind, that's exemplified by the best dressed fancy ball that the hockey club ran. And the first prize on that went to a Ku Klux Klan dress. And when you look at the local newspaper, the Raglan County Chronicle, as it was up to the 1980s, Raglan Chronicle took over probably about a decade later, took up the same title, or a very similar title, didn't have the subtitle, which in 1925 was the Settlers' Journal. And in fact, settlers was a word that many of the newspapers of that time used as a synonym for people. So one example was the Waikato Times, which in February 1925 reported the settlers of Tumata having at last got linked up with civilization by a metal road. They could have said the people of Tumata having at last got linked up with, I don't know whether civilization is even the right word either, by a metal road. But anyway, it was marking the opening of the gravel road to Tumata. They even had a celebration. I'll mention that a bit later on as well. And it was into that world that one of our well-known Maori activists, Eva Rickard, was born. She wasn't called Eva Rickard when she was born. The name Eva was given to her when she was starting at school and being born over on the Papakainga over at Kōpua. The first language would have been Te Reo Māori. She was born on the 19th of April, 1925. Into that sort of probably unconscious racist attitude that existed and probably still exists to some extent. And that's why we've got the Treaty Principles Bill, which is being discussed in Parliament. And if you haven't put your submissions in for that yet, then submissions close tomorrow. So if you think you must get round to doing it, then tomorrow is the must get round to do day. But anyway, as I say, Eva Rickard, she's known by most people, though her original name and I suppose her real name was Tua Iwa Hotai Kereopa, because Kereopa was her family name and she married Tex Rickard. She was much identified with the attempt to get the airfield returned. The airfield was built in 1941 on that Papakainga where she'd been born, and they demolished the buildings that were part of that settlement, and they put the airfield there. There is a photo in the New Zealand Herald for that year, 1941, showing a bulldozer flattening the sand dunes. I don't know whether they didn't see them flattening the buildings or whether they decided that a picture of flattening the sand dunes was less controversial. But anyway, in 1984, she led a 2,000-strong protest, Hikoi, about the Waitangi Day celebrations, saying that there shouldn't be celebrations until all the grievances had been settled, which is an interesting way to look at Waitangi Day. There's still grievances which haven't been settled, and I think they're still called celebrations, so maybe she didn't win that one. But as I say, she did win the, well, she didn't totally win the airfield battle. That's still to be won. There's still negotiation apparently going on between the government and the council and the various hapu involved. But she did get part of the airfield returned in 1987. And she also did quite a lot of campaigning for people who are unemployed, imprisoned, and generally underprivileged. And one of the other groups that was doing that at that time, back in 1925, was the Bryant Home. They were opened in the previous year, 1924. In 1924, they took about 20 Auckland children from underprivileged homes. In 1925, they increased that to 30. And they were gradually still getting it going, because in November they equipped the home with electrical appliances. Not sure what they did for heating or cooking before that, but the home had electric power long before, well, a decade before most of Raglan got it, because they set up the hydro plant at the foot of the cliff. Below the home, taking water from the Wainui stream. But in fact, there were some farmers who were worried about the amount of water they were taking, and they did actually measure it, and they seemed to have been reassured, because they found out that they were only taking 10.5 cubic feet a minute from the Wainui stream for their water supply and their power. And they measured the flow in the stream and found that that was only about a seventh of the total, so not particularly significant. One of the things that was a setback for the home in its first full year was that there was infantile paralysis around, which we generally know as polio. And in 1925, throughout the country, it had quite an effect on social life and trade and travel, particularly at the beginning of the year, much as COVID did a couple of years ago. And schools were closed from January to May. And when they reopened, the attendance wasn't compulsory. And the Bryant Home, which is now the Bible Camp out on the Wainui Road, it also closed not only for the outbreaks of infantile paralysis to avoid spreading it amongst the underprivileged children. Also, it closed in July, in winter of 1925, owing to the impassable condition of a mile of the road between Raglan and the home. No motor car has been able to get to the home for 2 months. So it's these stories which kept popping up on the state of the roads and what to do about them. What Raglan County decided to do was appeal to other councils to contribute to the metalling of the road, noting that the home mainly provided for Hamilton children. And they didn't get much of a response, though. Councils didn't like giving money away to other councils. So Cambridge did give them £5, rather. Which I was interested when I looked up the rate of inflation to realise that what was £5 then, which Cambridge gave them, is around about $600 in today's money. So not an inconsiderable contribution, but not hugely generous from a council. And there was somebody in Frankton called W.S. Higgins, who also said that he frequently used the road and recognised he should contribute to its upkeep. And also sent them £5. But the Hamilton Borough discussed it, and they discussed it several times and finally said no. And they had County Council, Raglan County Council, had a similar problem with the main road. The 1922 Main Highways Bill had changed the was changed by the Highways Amendment Act of 1923, because they realised there were problems with what had been done and the transition, and there was still doubt in 1924 and 1925 as to who should be paying what for the roads, and there had been an arrangement that Hamilton would pay for some of the main road, because it was recognised that a lot of traffic on the main road was coming from Hamilton. But in March 1925, there was a conference of councils, and they were told that that arrangement had lost its validity. And the Highways Board paid the county council. The Highways Board was a new organisation set up under the 1922 legislation. But the problem was that the county still had to pay interest on the cost of construction, and they one of the things that they did was to look at how much roads were costing, or how much they had cost, and how much was the sort of capital value of them, and all those sort of things, and they came out as a few million dollars. So interest on that must have been quite significant. So it was something of a problem. There was a minor change accepted by the Main Highways Board, this new organisation, that they agreed to extend the main road, which had ended at the post office on Bow Street, and instead they extended it down the length of Wallace Street. So they took on responsibility for maintaining Wallace Street down to the wharf. I don't know when it got chopped back, so it's now on the edge of town, but need to look into that sometime. And there was a report in March 1925 that said that, in fact, the main road wasn't too bad. It said the deviation road is metalled and well made throughout. There are numerous sharp curves, but so long as motorists keep to the left, sound their horn and slow down at the corners, they are safe. There were quite a few crashes, which I'll come to later, which suggests that they weren't too safe. But anyway, they go on to say the hill can be crossed comfortably in 20 minutes, which compares with about 3 or 4 minutes these days. So shows how twisty and slow that road was compared with the current one. And another report in December of 1925 said the road from Hamilton is in perfect condition, motoring over it being a real pleasure. And in July, the Raglan County Council planned to spend $240 to widen that main road on the divvy, up at the top of the divvy, the six sharpest bends, £240, which maybe sort of brings into the equation those £5 amounts that the Cambridge Council gave and the other councils didn't, because they also got offers of money from the Highways Board, most of the money coming from them, also money from the Hamilton Automobile Association, £20 from them, £10 from the Auckland Automobile Club, and £10 from the Hamilton Motorcycle Club. So they were giving rather more than that £5 which Cambridge had given. There's a photo which was in the Bradbury's 1925 holiday guide. Bradbury's brought out a series of guides to places around the country, and they illustrated them, and the illustrations are often quite useful to show how things were at the time. And there's a photo of a motor car parked up at the top of a divvy with what looks like quite a wide road, but obviously it must have been somewhat narrower on the tight corners. But also away from the gravelled main road, there were problems because heavy rain made, what they report said, made many of the leading roads quagmires and some impassable. And they said that in October of 1925, the local MP, Richard Bollard, he was going around trying to get people to vote for him because the elections were next month. So he came to speak in Raglan and then he wanted to go and speak in Tiaco. So what he did was to take a oil launch across the harbour to Ruakiwi Landing, which is still just about visible, but certainly not very obvious. But obviously a century ago it was in regular use. So he took an oil launch across there and then somebody took him by car from Ruakiwi to Tiaco. But the problem came on Richardson's Hill, where the report said the car floundered and slid about the road for some distance and then settled down with deep roars of protest from the engine into two deep holes where she stuck fast. And then the report goes on to say it took a couple of roadmen 2 hours to get that car out, even though there'd been quite a lot of work already done on that Ruakiwi road. It's still quite a rough gravel road, but don't think anyone gets stuck like that on it anymore, because even then they'd put quite a lot of rough limestone on it, and they'd also done 2.25 miles of earthworks, and they'd reckoned that they needed another 2,000 yards of metal gravel to finish the whole road and make it more usable so that the MP wouldn't get stuck in it. There were also lots of other roads that were being improved at that time for motor cars, though there was still only a minority of ratepayers who owned them, but the way that, well, I suppose it's still a situation that we subsidise the roads quite a bit through our rates. Seems to me that the roads ought to be paid for by the vehicles that use them rather than by ratepayers, but that was a system that was set up or reorganised back in 1922 and in 1925, and indeed in 2025 it's still a system that we've got. So about a third of the rates that we pay go towards maintaining roads, which seems to me to be rather odd that in this day and age when we're conscious of the danger of the roads and conscious of the climate change effects of roads, that we still carry on using ratepayer money to subsidise them. But anyway, moving back to 1925, there was a lot of work going on the roads then. There was an organisation called the State Advances Superintendent, and they agreed that Raglan County Council could take out a $550 loan at 5.25%. So interest rates were probably rather higher then than today, to complete metalling of some carrioy riding roads. The counties in those days were still divided into separate ridings, which had been set up in the 1870s. Carrioy riding was one of those, and they were called ridings because the idea was that you could ride around them in a day or so. The Wainui Road, the Bryant Home Road, as it was called then, was one of them. So that was going to be getting some money and sort out that problem that I mentioned about traffic not being able to get through the home through to the home for a couple of months in the middle of winter. And they also declared that the Whanga Road was going to be a county council road. Back in 1906, a road that was 9 foot wide had been built out to the Totota Gorge, well, almost to Totota Gorge, to the Raglan side of Totota Gorge. And that was going to be improved with this loan But as you know, it's still quite a winding, narrow road that goes round the mountain. But I think it was only in the 60s, 70s when it was finally completed all the way around. But anyway, getting back to 1925, as well as loans and rates, the government provided £11,935 for roads in the Raglan area. Not the whole of the county, but just the sort of area, the roads that we're fairly familiar with, used from here. But the problem was that it had to be at least matched by local ratepayers, which is why they were looking at taking out that loan and generally finding money from all over the place, including charging trucks or lorries, as they were called then. The public work statement, which came out every year, included £3,600 to make temporary improvements near the White Eka stream on the route that used to go across the harbour at Artea. We now go to Carfia on what's not a very good road, but certainly better than trying to go over the harbour, which would have been only accessible at low tide and which had lots of mud on it, and where even today when people take vehicles out on Artea Harbour, they get them stuck. And think of a couple of vehicles which have come to grief over there, one fairly recently and one about a decade ago, both of them slowly rusting near the harbour. But anyway, so it was a problem route going across the harbour, which is why £3,600 was given to the county council to start work on the, what's the current road, the Makomako Kafia Road, which finally opened in 1928. So another 3 years of work on that and £3,600 of government money to go into it, but also being matched by ratepayer money. In that same area, Makomako, Jim Meekings built a school in 1925. It was still the period when country schools were being opened. From the late 1920s onwards, they started closing country schools and putting on buses to take kids to school. But they were still looking to provide local schools in 1925, so they built Makomako School. And, of course, this was before that road had been opened, that road that opened in 1928, three years on. And the problem was getting the materials for the building the school to the school site. And the timber came into Raglan by steamer from Onehunga, and then it was loaded onto trucks and by porters, who were the local hauliers at that time. And the trucks or lorries took it to Pakaka Bridge, and where the bridge goes over at the moment. I think that was built a year or so earlier, so the bridge was available. It was possible to get to the wharf there and put it onto a raft. And from there, the Waitara family steered the raft across the harbour and up the stream using poles. They would have taken advantage of the tides and gone down from Pakaka on an outgoing tide and gone up the stream to Makomako on an incoming tide, using poles to punt themselves along. Finally, the school started in October 1925, having at that time 31 girls and 16 boys, so a much bigger population of children than is in that area now. So that's maybe the reason, probably also the school buses, that the school closed in 1984, so it was open from 1925 to 84. That public work statement also included £1,438 for the Hamilton to Raglan Road, that's the main road, including work on the Waipa Bridge at Whatawhata, because there was a report saying that there was a nearly a foot gap between the bridge and the road level. and that it was a sea of slush in wet weather. So they spread 2-inch blue metal on that, which came from the 10-mile and 16-mile quarries. They put it on 3 miles of the main road, that's probably why we had the report saying how good it was when it came to December 1925. But it was also good because the county was limiting the weight of trucks on the roads. They still had powers to do that, and they limited the weight of trucks on most of the main roads, or most of the roads rather, to 4 tons and to 6 tons on the main road. So there aren't too many 4-ton trucks around these days. There were other roadworks being done too. The Cora Butter Factory to Tomato Road that I mentioned, that celebration of connecting the settlers to civilization. They use blue metal from Nicholson's Quarry, still one of the local farmers, to complete the metalling to Tomato. And in February 1925, Mrs. A.E. Jerome cut a ribbon, and there were celebrations at Jerome Corner. They also put in the metalled approaches to the single-lane bridge, the Okotoru Bridge, which connects Raglan and Raglan West these days. It was an earlier bridge, but still the same embankment. So the, up until 1925, the approach roads would have been mud, but in 1925 they put gravel on them, and they did the first 5 kilometres of earthworks on Waitatuna Valley Road. So the first, starting to build the first 5 kilometres of that road, it had been a track before. And they also did work on the Tiako Wharf Road and on the Wainaro Springs to Tiuku Road, the one that links us with the hot springs, and also on O'Shea's Road down near Mokomoko, and on Ponds Road towards Tomata, Phillips Road down towards Artea, also in the area of the Ruapuki Mountain Road, as they call it, which is what we now call Ruapuki Road, because the original road was the Waimari Road, much more circuitous route, and Timari Roads also in the area. I notice it's just past the top of the hour, so maybe it's time to have the top of the hour, and then we'll carry on looking at some. I said the divvy was supposed to be safe if you took it carefully, but there were quite a few reports of crashes, so we'll come to those. But we'll have top of the hour at rotation first.
Kia ora whangaroa. This is your local captain, Barlow of the Wahine Mui. Come and join us as we go around this beautiful Whangaroa harbour and learn all about the Raglan history. We also have bookings for private parties, memorial events and family reunions. We can do it all on the water. Also, you can just rock up to the wharf for a lunchtime or sunset cruise. We've got a licensed bar and snacks, and you can check out our schedule at raglanboatcharters.co.nz. So hope to see you guys soon. Kia ora.
If you have ever thought about volunteering, now is a great time to contact Volunteering Waikato. Their website makes it easier than ever before to find the right opportunity in your town. Get involved in your community. Boost your CV, meet new people and learn new skills. For more information, go to volunteeringwaikato.org.nz. Volunteering Waikato, enriching lives.
Soul of Whangaroa, good sounds, good karma.
Jingle itself's part of history. You're listening to Raglan, talking to Raglan on Raglan Community Radio. It's 7:05, so another 25 minutes of Raglan, talking to Raglan, 25 minutes of history looking back to 1925, a century ago. And as I said, the talk was often about where the money was going to come from for building these roads or improving these roads. In the case of the Rupert Pookie Mountain Road, building it, and Whitestone Valley and ones like that. Some, as I said earlier, some of the tax came from lorries or trucks, as we call them these days. And in July, Raglan County Council was being accused of being wasteful with that money. They refuted the motor association's claims, and they said that they had 480 miles of roads, 300 of those 480 being mud, so only 180 miles of gravel. And as I said, the value that they were paying interest on was over $3.5 million, £3,691,867, so if you think that £5 converted to £600 in modern money, then £3.5 million was quite a lot of money. And quite a lot to be paying interest on. In the year ending 31st of March 1925, county salaries, including the health inspector, were £1,541.06. Expenses for council members attending meetings were £260. Probably reflects how difficult it was to get around in those days. Relatively high compared with the current claims, and audit, licensing, valuation, postage and office expenses, £234, printing, advertising and stationery, fire insurance, legal expenses, upkeep of cars, because even in those days they had quite a fleet, it seems, £94, 10 shillings and 9 pence to maintain the cars, a total of £2,815 that was spent. And that was on total receipts of 50,300. So they reckoned that they were doing quite well, with the cost of administration being 5.75% of the cost of the money that they spent on roads. They also used some of that money to buy a Porter steamroller. That was £1,060. And they bought a couple more graders in 1925 as well. And they took another loan of £1,500 to complete the metalling on Orchetti Road, which had been the main road, but then the main road has now bypassed it. And they also laid metal at the start of Hills Road and spent £10 on Van Hoot House Road, so the equivalent of just over $1,000 these days. So I don't know how much they got for that, but presumably some improvement, because it is quite a steep hill at the start of Van Hout Road, so maybe that's what they were doing to try and improve that. We had the news a week or two ago that the current road toll, or the 2024 road toll, was the lowest in proportion to the population of the country since 1920. Which means that things were improving, well, they'll carry on improving with the way that the current government's looking at speed limits and such like, remains to be seen. But by 1925, things were getting worse than they had been in 1920. And probably some of the crashes during that year were typical of what was going on across the country. There was, I think, the only death in 1925 on Raglan's roads was somebody from Hamilton, Mrs. Mona Fraser Tyler. She was 31 years old, and she died on the deviation after visiting their new beach cottage, which was being built. And the problem was that they wanted to pass a large black car, so they pulled to the side of the road, but the car was travelling too fast, according to the findings of the inquiry into it. It slid 18 or 20 yards into loose metal and rolled over the bank, injuring several people and, say, killing one person. Then in February, a month later, Another Hamilton person, Ernest Alexander Cooper, was charged with dangerous driving around a corner near Tiuku, not keeping left and not giving his name and address. He was fined £15, which when you think of £5 being £5 being $600, $1,800. Not sure whether most fines are that large these days for dangerous driving and not keeping left and not giving name and address. It'd be interesting to see what those boys get as a penalty for the things they did last night. So there was another person, an EW body, another Hamilton driver. He tried to pass a gig. So there were still quite a lot of horse-drawn vehicles around, but he got into soft ground and the car went over a small bank and overturned. But in this case, there wasn't too much in the way of damage to car or people. In April, a Hamilton taxi collided with the Raglan mail car at a bag corner near the summit. The magistrate said it was purely accidental. So it depends how influential you are, I think, as to whether you're found guilty of dangerous driving or whether it's purely accidental. On 31st of August, on the Raglan deviation, a Hudson car driven by Miss P.H. Nofka was going towards Hamilton and met a motorcycle coming the other way on a bend and swerved out so that no one was hurt. And there were two other crashes in August as well. A Mr. Ellis Hamilton collided with a Mr. Bagnall, he being from Tiuku on the Raglan side of a deviation, and Mr. Ellis from Auckland collided with the Reverend Aspland from Frankton at a bad corner near the top of a deviation. So I said they were spending money on six bad corners on near the top of a deviation. So they were aware of those problems. And the vicar's wife shot through the windscreen and was badly cut and unconscious for a while. But the report said she's doing quite well. There was, as those reports indicate, quite a lot of people coming over the divvy who weren't living in Hamilton. And there was a report in January of 1925 saying there was increased activity this season in the establishment of summer seaside cottages at Raglan. A number of Hamilton residents have built houses in which their families spend the summer school vacations, while the businessmen motor over for weekends, a run of about 1.5 hours, the roads being in exceptionally good condition. And they also mention great numbers of cars which sped down the white streets, which I think would have been a reference to the limestone that had been put down Bow Street and Cliff Street in 1924. And because they'd widened the road on Bow Street. If you have a look at the Raglan 23 article, then you'll see that there's three photos, one above the other, showing the road as it was before 1924, Bow Street, with a big wide strip of grass. It had been that way at least since 1910, because there are some photos then showing something very similar. There's just one lane down each side of Bow Street, just wide enough for a car to get down, and in between it's all grass. there's a photo which I think would have been in 1924, showing the work that they did then to lay out all this limestone, this what they were calling the white strip. Then there's another photo, which I think would have been taken in 1925, so it's showing some small plants in the middle of that small grass strip, which is pretty much what we've got at the moment. So those small plants have grown into huge palm trees and pūzkawas. So they're now about 100 years old. I can't actually find any reference to them being planted. But though were references to some of the other things that were being done. Like in March, the plots in Bow Street, which had been created as islands in the widened roads the previous October, were grassed. So March 1925 was when they put grass back on what they presumably dug up. And in July, the Beautifying Society, Raglan Beautifying Society, they'd been formed back in 1918, 7 years earlier. They decided to plant those plots with a phoenix palm, which is now the main tree that we've got down there, but also several other things, canariensis and fan palms, euonymus, liquid amber, copper beech, imena, floribunda, carica, pururi, cape silverleaf, puhutukawa, which is what we've got there as well to a lesser extent, flowering gum, ruse and silver wattle, and enclose them with ferro concrete posts with piping and wire. And they were going to spend £19 on all that. So maybe it didn't go all that far. Well, not as far as they hoped, because as far as I'm aware, the only things which went in were the phoenix palms and the puhutukawa. So not sure what happened to the rest or to the concrete posts and the piping that was supposed to go in. There was also mention of another thing in Bow Street, which I can't find any other mention of, which is a big gun called Bertha, which apparently was reported as placed in Bow Street without further opposition. And I can't find any report of the opposition in the first place. So not totally sure what the gun was or what the opposition was. It could have been a captured machine gun, because one of those was given to Raglan in 1920 as a sort of souvenir from the First World War. I think one of the other changes in the two bottom photos is that it fairly clearly says Hunts, Drapers and Outfitters in the middle one, and it fairly clearly shows Hardy Brothers Drapery Shop in the bottom one. And again, that gives an indication of when the photos were taken, because the Hardy Brothers took on a lease of Reg Hunt's drapery shop about 1925. It was also 1925 when the Raglan Town Board accepted a tender for the footbridge, £2,261, to be built by a company called A. Jane of Hamilton. And it was a 320-foot-long, 6-foot-wide reinforced concrete footbridge. The pillars were 40 feet apart, and it gave a 15-foot clearance for boats. And it had been designed by Thompson and Oliver Robert Farrer of Hamilton. And apparently there was some suggesting that it should have been a road bridge rather than a footbridge, because it was explained that they difficulty of constructing approaches on the Raglan side and the sandy domain make vehicular traffic undesirable. And as when they upgraded the path recently and widened it, they closed off the walkway, temporary closure of the path from the stone wharf to the bathing sheds. The bathing sheds were effectively replaced by the bridge, because before the bridge, it had been necessary if you wanted to go to Wainamu Beach or Naranui Beach to get a ferry across from the jetty at the bottom of Bow Street. The bridge solved that problem. Back in 1887, the Harbourview Hotel had donated the bathing sheds, and there was a small area, probably not much bigger than a swimming pool area, which you can see on the photos was enclosed by wire netting and had been considered a safe area to swim, where you wouldn't get swept away by the currents. We keep asking for a swimming pool these days, but the most we've ever had, I think, was that one that was enclosed by the wire netting. The bridge was finished by Christmas. The work only started in April, so much probably much the same speed as when they rebuilt the bridge in 2011. But my guess is that it doesn't say how they built the bridge. Quite a lot of it was done from the water, I'm guessing. But there were also plans mentioned to plant trees on the what for a long time was known as the Kaupo Domain, now the Papahoa Domain, described then as about 40 acres of sandhills, and the plan was to develop it as a seaside park. So I'm not sure whether it's still intent or still called a seaside park, but there is now a district council plan which covers it. But yeah, tree planting was going on down the centre of Bow Street, and there were plans for it over on Papahoa Domain. But out in the bush, there was still quite a lot of cutting and burning going on. Heywood Armstrong started a sawmill on Paparata up near the top of Ruapuke Road to cut Rimu. That was 1925. And the Raglan Sawmilling Company was also cutting timber from around Carrioy. Their manager, Charles McHazy, back in 1924, he'd been jailed for a week for being drunk in charge of a motor car. 1925 wasn't a good year for him either. He was sacked. And he took a case against the company saying he wanted more compensation. But the judge found that he was incompetent and negligent. But he also made allegations in court that the company machinery was poor quality and that a hauler broke on a not very big log. But that mill obviously was in trouble in 1925 and burnt down in a bushfire in 1928 and didn't reopen. It was also reported in March 1925 that settlers in the Waitatuna district had been burning off their bush in anticipation of the breakup of the weather. And Waitatuna has been under a heavy pall of smoke. So felling of the bush at the top of a divvy started the year before, in 1924. But there had been a campaign to try and preserve it, but there was a minor victory in that respect in 10th of September 1925, when about 15 acres of bush on the northern side of a deviation was made into a scenic reserve by the Raglan County Council. There were people, I think, right from the beginning of settlement who were interested in nature, and probably well before settlement as well. But the nature reports were something that appeared in the newspapers from time to time. There was somebody called P.L. Hill. I don't think it was any relative of the Hill who lived on Hills Road. But anyway, he lived at Three Streams and was making nature reports from, I think, 1916 through to 1941. And in 1925, he noted that wekas were everywhere, and that there were a few red admiral and small light blue butterflies. But he did comment that there weren't the white butterflies that he knew from Europe, which I thought was interesting, because I looked them up and found out that they first came into this country in 1930. So those white butterflies that are so fond of eating cabbages in particular first came into the country, were first found in the country and near Napier in 1930, so presumably in some import of goods to the port there. But wildlife generally was in decline. Not sure whether it's still the case, probably is. We've still got endangered species and moray dolphins and kiwi and all the other things which are gradually still declining. Because it wasn't only that the bush was being chopped down and burnt, but there were also stoats. Stoats had spread to Raglan in the 1890s, and there was a report in 1925 saying the number of feathered game available to sportsmen has become less and less because of stoats. But although they were concerned about stoats, they don't seem to have been learnt the lesson from that, because in April 1925, the Carfia Rod and Gun Club decided to find out about introducing possums, which of course is one of the major pests we've got in our bush now, and which the karaoke project spends a lot of time trying to catch, as well as rats and the mustelids. And by October, Waikato hunters had left the Auckland Acclimatisation Society, and there was a strong Raglan Acclimatisation and Game Conservation Club. And as part of that example of not learning from the Stoats, they released 5,000 rainbow trout that were liberated in streams flowing into Raglan Harbour. And there was also mention of the doctor's cat that got in the news by killing a stoat. That was Dr. Saunders, and he was replaced in 1925, or left in 1925 and replaced by Dr. Roland Cashmore, who bought the Raglan practice from him and moved from Carfia in January 1925. Didn't stay long, though, because he sold to another doctor, Dr. Arthur Beresford Sturtevant, in August 1926. Stayed best part of 2 years. Maybe I'll leave the rest of it till next week, because I was going to move on and talk about the ferry and the wharf and things like that. And we've got to 27 minutes past seven, so maybe what I'll do instead is just to play a bit of music. Beethoven's Symphony No. 5. So if I press that and press that, then if you have been, thanks for listening. If you haven't, I hope you might join us next week, 6-ish till 7:30-ish here on Raglan Community Radio, here around your Whangaroa, and here's Beethoven.